In Lebanon, the Christian Phalangists and other warring forces finance their arms purchases in part through the drug traffic. Lebanon has long been a key point in the world's narcotics traffic. Opium grown in Turkey, where some of it is now smuggled by the fascist Grey Wolves, was refined and transshipped out of Beirut to Marseille, or now Sicily, for further processing, and then final shipment to the United States. Lebanon is also a source of other drugs. Muslim farmers in the Bekaa Valley near the Syrian border grow hashish in profusion. The crop last year was estimated at 2,000 tons, up from a mere 100 tons before the outbreak of the Civil War. The crop is then moved to the United States, Western Europe, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia by the Christian Phalangists and their dire enemies, but fellow Christians, in the Frangieh clan, based in the north and enjoying close relations with the Syrians. A whole string of Christian-controlled ports has sprung up north of Beirut to handle the traffic, drawing millions of dollars of business away from government docks. Now, a couple of key points here. Again, as we mentioned before in the last article, the passage of Italian right-wing terrorists, all of them, not all of them, but most of them, actually connected through Stefano Della Chiaia or others to the P2 group, okay, because this is going to be very important. The P2 group, again, directly connected into the Vatican. Most of these folks winding up in the Lebanese training camps, the Falange fascist training camps, where they are training alongside other fascist terrorists. Also going on at the same time, the Falangists participating in the narcotics traffic with the help of the fascist Grey Wolves. The Grey Wolves we will talk about more later. Needless to say, they are going to be very important because Mehmet Ali Agha, the would-be assassin of the Pope, was himself a member of this Turkish Nazi organization, the Grey Wolves. And again, their involvement in the drug traffic coming out of the Middle East, very important. The connection of these through the Phalangists of these drug traffickers with the Italian fascists begin to set the stage for this massive guns, drugs, and terrorism network that seems to be so integral a part, indeed probably the key item in understanding the whole attempt on the life of John Paul II and all the other things that we've been talking about.
Now, we'll be talking about the Grey Wolves at greater length next week. We'll talk about, review a little of the material that we talked about in Radio Free America number 14. By the way, for people who would like to review some of the history of the Pan-Turkist movement and its connections to Turkish fascism and international fascism today, also specifically the World Anti-Communist League, check Radio Free America number 14.
Okay, I just want to mention, broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC, Los Altos Hills.
Now, remember the aforementioned connection between the fascist Grey Wolves and the drug smuggling, which the French connection. By the way, in a series on narcotics and organized crime in the intelligence community, we'll be describing the French connection and bringing back in elements of the P2 complex in later broadcasts. But for the time being, we want to focus on the Grey Wolves and their role in the Middle East narcotics traffic, which leaves Lebanon for Sicily and Marseille. Research credit for the following story goes to Ted Rubenstein. This is from the London Observer of Sunday, January 22, 1983. The article is written by Kenneth McKenzie in Turkey, and it's headlined, Link is Sought Between Pope and a Murder. And now we begin to get into the actual, some of the substance of the Pope shooting itself, or connections thereof. The Turkish government has launched a fresh investigation into the murder in February 1979 of the distinguished editor Abdi Ipekci, I-P-E-K-C-I, according to official sources in Ankara. The findings could be sensational, for the man convicted of the Ipekci murder was Mehmet Ali Agha, the gunman who 2 years later attempted to assassinate the Pope in St. Peter's Square in Rome. That there is a link between the two crimes is virtually self-evident, but until now the connection has baffled the most expert investigators. The Turkish government feels that so much mystery surrounds the Ipekci case that it needs to be reopened. A Turkish prosecutor, Omer Aluquaglu, is expected to fly to Rome soon to confer with the Italian authorities. That man's last name, by the way, is Alucuoglu. Agha was captured about 5 months after the murder of Ipekci, and during a protracted and bizarre trial made some extraordinary allegations. At first, he confessed to the killing, but later vehemently denied it, adding that nevertheless, he knew who the real killers were. He escaped from prison in mysterious circumstances on November 25, 1979, and was sentenced to death in absentia. By this time, he was believed to be in Bulgaria or on his way. At the time, Agha was widely portrayed as either a psychopath or a hireling of the extreme right-wing terrorist organization known as the Grey Wolves, or both. Information reaching the Turkish security authorities in recent months, and which has prompted the reopening of the Ipekci case, points to a very different explanation of the editor's murder. I would add that it does not rule out the connection with the Grey Wolves. They are very much involved in narcotics trafficking, as we've looked at and we'll look at some more later. Continuing with the article, there is strong circumstantial evidence, which the Turkish investigators will now have to sift carefully, that Ipeki's assassination was planned by the now notorious Istanbul Mafia, the underworld fraternity of heroin and arms smugglers who in the past month have become implicated in the plot against the Pope. And those links with the Bulgarian authorities are conclusively established. Before his death, Ipeki, a social democrat, was planning to publish in his daily newspaper Milliyet a series of articles exposing the gangsters. Experts following the case are now convinced that the mafia wanted him eliminated. Even more sensational, but by Turkish standards at that time totally credible, is a report that prominent Istanbul businessmen working with the mafia were planning to take over Milliyet, the country's most influential newspaper. Ipeki is known to have resisted these moves. The link between mafia armed smugglers and the Bulgarian authorities has inevitably stirred speculation about a Bulgarian connection in the Ipeki murder, but that remains unproven. Ironically, several of the mafia leaders suspected of involvement in the plot against Ipeki originated from or had close connections with Malatya province or Malatya province in eastern Turkey. This is the area where Aja was born and spent his formative years. That tends to reinforce a theory that the mafia took him over as their hireling after he established himself in Istanbul. So the key points from this article basically are the indication that Abdi Ipeki, the assassinated editor of Milliyet, apparently killed by Mehmet Ali Aja, had run afoul not only of right-wing Turkish businessmen, but more specifically for our purposes here, but he had run afoul of Turkish drug smugglers and who in turn are involved with transiting their wares through Bulgaria. Now, the implication of this article is that Ipeki had become a thorn in the side after publishing articles about these drug smugglers, and that they combined with the right-wing businessmen who wanted to drive Milliyet's political views to the right to have Abdi Ipeki assassinated. In this scenario, Ali Aja basically is committing the assassination on behalf of drug smugglers who are operating out of Turkey but very influential throughout the Middle East. That obviously is not inconsistent with the role of the fascist Grey Wolves in smuggling drugs, and it's worth bearing in mind for our purposes, because we're going to take a look at the role of the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring in the Pope shooting later in the broadcast.
Okay, we're going to follow up on this a little bit, reading from a segment of an article in the Middle East magazine for July 1981. The article is headlined, How Aja Was Used. Aja's first victim, Abdi Ipeki, was a liberal, well-educated, internationally popular Turkish journalist. He defended democratic rights and condemned all kinds of extremism, especially terrorist movements. Milliyet was one of the most reliable daily newspapers under his editorship. But very soon after his death, it became right-wing. It began to publish articles praising military prisons and defending NAP militants. And, of course, NAP, the National Action Party, the neo-Nazi organization that Aja belonged to. It is now clear that Ipeki was the victim of the extreme right, and that Aja could not have survived in Europe spending thousands of dollars if an internationally organized group did not support him. In West Berlin, in particular, NAP exported, quote-unquote, militants, are so well organized that they can send reports to their bases in Turkey about the activities of leftist groups in Germany and elsewhere in Europe. So now the story is beginning to form. Now here on one hand we can see that Mehmet Ali Aja is a member of the Nationalist Action Party, a Nazi organization or a neo-Nazi organization, a fascist Turkish organization. These Turkish fascists are directly involved in the drug trade coming out of Lebanon and Turkey and running into, among other places, most notably Sicily and through Europe and into the United States. Now, Aja, his first victim, is a liberal editor of a liberal newspaper who has been focusing on these particular cases and on this drug trade and the involvement of right-wing Turkish businessmen in this particular thing. So Aja kills him, is then allowed to walk out of a military prison, later winds up going around Europe spending all kinds of money, which we'll talk about more later, spending money right and left, shoots the Pope. The Pope, who just happens to be involved in the middle of a huge scam, as we're going to see, going on with the same drug traffickers in conjunction with Italian fascists and West German or people of the same ilk and things of that nature, also connected into the Turks. All of this is going on, and yet we are going to be told by people like Claire Sterling and Michael Ledeen that, in fact, that this is all a KGB plot. But right down the line, we were seeing that everything that's been done where we can ascertain any benefit that has accrued to anybody politically, it has accrued to the right wing, to the drugs and guns smugglers, to the terrorists, and to the fascist organizations.
Now, remember the fascist Grey Wolf link to the French connection originating in Lebanon, and also remember the discussion of the connections between Italian and German fascists and the Falange, or Falange Party of Lebanon. That is an explicitly fascist party founded in emulation of Adolf Hitler and his Nazi party in Germany. Now, an interesting name is going to crop up in connection with arms and drug smuggling from the Middle East to Italy, and this will provide a transition to the actual discussion of the Stibom arms for drugs ring. Research credit for the following goes again to Ted Rubenstein, and the translation again by Jonathan Marshall of the Oakland Tribune. This is from Europeo magazine of December 20th, 1982, and it reads as follows. The man with a kilo of heroin in his suitcase at the Hotel Plaza di Maitri was named Jamal and had famous cousins in Beirut. The man who police tracked was Jean-Michel Jamal, cousin of the current president of Lebanon. The three sacks of pure heroin amounting to 1 kilo were worth 1 billion lira. Jamal explained, quote, I am a trafficker in arms for the Christian Maronite Party, a party which is, as you know, in a war with the Muslims and Palestinians. He explained that in Italy he purchased only arms accessories like binoculars. I buy arms solely from the countries of East Europe, unquote. All this happened the 9th of April, 1980, before the Jamals were in power and before the investigation at Trento uncovered the huge guns for drug ring. That, by the way, is Stibom. 2 months after the arrest on June 12, 1980, the ambassador to Rome from Lebanon wrote a letter to the head of the Venice prison to explain, in case it wasn't known, that Jean-Michel wasn't just anybody. Other letters followed. They explained that Jean-Michel had 8 brothers and 3 sisters. George was a priest and head of the Christian community in Lebanon. Paul headed the energy ministry in Lebanon. Eugene was responsible for social development. Pierre headed one of the biggest insecticide companies in the Middle East. And then there were the cousins Bashir and Amin, who became presidents of Lebanon. So the cousin of the president of Lebanon is being held in Italy for a huge, huge heroin and arms smuggling racket that he was involved in. And they raised the question here that this happened before the discovery of the huge arms for drugs ring at Trento. That arms for drugs ring at Trento is Stibom, and again, the possible connection with the Jamal family, and in turn the collaboration between the Falange, Italian fascists, and Grey Wolves in the Middle Eastern drug and arms smuggling should be borne in mind, because now we're going to get into Stibom proper.
And now also, as we were talking about in the Vatican Bank in terms of the financial manipulations of Sindona and Calvi, we were talking about millions and millions of dollars, and as you will see, when we start to look at Stibom and the kinds of amounts of money and products involved, we're talking about billions of dollars, a worldwide network of arms, drugs, and terrorism on a level probably not seen before on the face of the earth. We're talking huge. This article is from the San Francisco Examiner for Thursday, November 25th, 1982. It's headlined, Biggest, in quotes, Arms Ring Busted. Subheaded, Italian swapped copters, tanks for heroin. Dateline, Varese, Italy. UPI Wire story. Investigators cracked what was called, quote, the world's biggest illegal arms trafficking organization that sent millions of weapons to the Middle East in return for heroin and other drugs. Judge Carlo Palermo, in charge of the investigation, said yesterday that the arms the organization sent to various Middle East countries included helicopters, German Leopard tanks, and machine guns. I should just mention that a little later on the broadcast, we'll find out that there were weapons even more impressive than Leopard tanks and helicopters involved. Continuing with the article. In return, the Milan-based organization brought into Italy heroin and other drugs through agents in Turkey and other Middle East countries, the judge said. He said most of the drugs went to Northern Europe, but some also went to Southern Italy and Sicily, where the mafia runs a multi-million dollar racket smuggling drugs to the United States. Quote, we have cracked the world's biggest illegal arms trafficking organization, which had Milan and the Middle East as its terminals, unquote, Palermo said. Making another insert, when they say they had Milan, it had Milan as its headquarters, as we will find out later in the broadcast. Not only did it have Milan as its headquarters, but it had a very specific and very interesting, for our purpose, building as its headquarters in Milan. Going along with the article. Quote, over a period of years, they sent millions of war weapons, including heavy tanks and helicopters, to the Middle East, for which they were paid in narcotics, unquote. The judge said 41 members of the ring have been arrested and would face trial in February. Arrest warrants have been issued against another 159 suspects, but action on these would depend on the outcome of the continuing investigation, he said. The investigation started in December 1980 as a routine check into drug running in the Milan area. A Turk named Asim Akaja reportedly gave police information that led to the discovery of 310 pounds of heroin buried in zinc packets near a villa in Bolzano and a hotel in Trento in the Alpine region of northeast Italy. But the judge said the full extent of the arms for drugs ring emerged only recently when police arrested Henry Arsan, A-R-S-A-N, age 70, a Syrian in Varese. Judge Palermo described Arsan as, quote, a big shot in the world scene of arms trafficking. Police also jailed Arsan's Italian wife, Giovanna, age 54, on charges of taking part in illegal arms and drug trafficking. From documents found in Arsan's possession, police located the headquarters of the ring in an import-export company in Milan called Stibam, S-T-I-B-A-M, Stibam International Transport. The judge gave no indication where the tanks and helicopters came from, but press reports said the gang had links with weapons manufacturers in France, West Germany, and Belgium. Okay, a couple of points to make. As we will find out, not only France, West Germany, and Belgium, but they had intense and very close and, in fact, governmental ties with arms manufacturers in the United States. Also, as mentioned before, Stibam's head offices were in Milan, as we will find out. I don't want to spoil the surprise for those of you who don't know, in a very interesting location in Milan.
Okay, and remember Henry Arsan and the name Stibam, because those are the main focuses foci for the rest of the broadcast. The day after the article Nip Just Read You appeared, specifically November 26, 1982, the following article appeared in the same paper, the San Francisco Examiner. On 11-26-82, the Examiner ran this story, an AP story out of Milan, under the headline, Did Big Italian Bank Finance Arms Gang? And the subhead is, Smugglers had an office in its building. It reads as follows. Italian police are investigating whether the scandal-plagued, bankrupt Banco Ambrosiano financed an international gang of arms and drug smugglers, says Italian TV. Police began questioning bank officials yesterday after it was learned that the smugglers, described by a magistrate as the largest world organization of illegal arms traffic, unquote, had an office above an Ambrosiano branch in Milan, the state TV channel RAI said. I would interrupt that is the main branch, the headquarters of Banco Ambrosiano. Continuing, the former vice president of the Ambrosiano, Roberto Rassone, denied that the bank was involved, RAI reported. Investigators said the gang furnished Middle East countries, including Iran, with arms exported illegally from Europe and the United States. It named no other countries. Helicopters and armored cars were exported illegally in exchange for narcotics, the investigating magistrate Carlo Palermo was quoted as saying, and the drugs, mainly heroin, were then sold in Europe. Police captured the alleged head of the gang, Henry Arsan, a 70-year-old Syrian, and his Italian wife, Giovanna, 54. The magistrate said they were charged with illegal traffic of arms and narcotics. Arsan owned a hauling company that occupied offices rented from Banco Ambrosiano in Milan and served as a front for the gang, police said. Warrants are out for 200 other suspected members of the gang, including several Greeks, Turks, and Yugoslavs, Palermo said. During a two-year investigation, police discovered that the gang had invested proceeds in banks in Austria, West Germany, and Switzerland. Police began working on the case in 1980 after a Lebanese Turk named Asim Akaya tipped off his brother, a police officer. Other press reports said that the smugglers were working in collaboration with the Sicilian Mafia. So, this huge arms for drug smuggling ring, and bear in mind Mehmet Ali Eja and the Grey Wolves' connections to drug smuggling from that part of the world and the speculation about the Abdi Apeki murder, Arsan's arms for drugs ring, the largest illegal arms exporting operation in the world, is not only located right above Banco Ambrosiano's headquarters in Milan, but is rented from Banco Ambrosiano. It was from the windows of that building that Roberto Calvi's secretary and the late unfortunate Alberto Della Ca basically they went from the windows, whether of their own volition or somebody else's, as appears probable. We'll probably never know for sure. This same bank building, the Milan Ambrosiano headquarters, it had a office for the man named Roberto Rassone, who was shot in an assassination attempt outside those headquarters. We'll be talking about the people Abruciati and Balducci again in just a couple of minutes.
Now, again, just to solidify excuse me, some of these points here, lest anybody still out there, some Peter Pan devotee out there who still believes in fairies, would like to think that this is mere case of coincidence. Let's point out again that, as we detailed earlier in the broadcast, at the far end of this particular program, we've seen already, at the far end of this particular operation, excuse me, in South and Central America, P2, International Fascista, and these other organizations are directing money from Italy, from places, specifically the Banco Ambrosiano, into phony dummy companies in South and Central America, where that money is being used to sponsor terrorism, to transport drugs into the United States in return for weapons. In other words, we've already seen that the far end of the P2 connections into South and Central America are actively involved in this guns and drug trade. At the other end, we have seen that the right-wing terrorists also involved with P2 are connected with the phalangist training camps. Out of these same phalangist operations are coming the other end of the drug smuggling. In the middle of the operation is the Banco Ambrosiano, one of the main banks that the P2 and its directors, its fascist directors, were using to finance these operations in Italy and in South and Central America, and presumably some of that money was also going to get these right-wing terrorists trained in the phalangist training camps in Lebanon. And in the same main bank building of the Banco Ambrosiano, the headquarters for this entire Stibom operation just happens to be upstairs. Now, folks, I think even the most skeptical of you out there will have real difficulty stretching the bounds of coincidence to that extreme.
In fact, an article we're going to read in a few minutes concludes with a statement that the exact phrase is too many coincidences, and one of the things that they're looking at is the subject of the article Nip's about to read you, namely a number of other intersections between the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring and the Banco Ambrosiano associations, and that meaning Roberto Calvi and people around him in the P2 nexus.
Absolutely. Now we're going to read another Jonathan Marshall translation of an article that originally appeared in Corriere della Sera, the Italian newspaper, for December 31st, 1982. It's headlined, A Who's Who of the Italo-Turkish Drug Trade. The Turkish bosses. The last, oh, by the way, I should just mention, for the rest of the broadcast, Dave and I are going to be reading a lot of Turkish names. Of all the languages that we wrestle with on this broadcast, I think Turkish is probably the most difficult for us. So any native Turkish speakers or Turkic language experts in the audience, please bear with us. We're just going to try and make them consistent, and we'll spell them whenever possible, although we won't spell all of them because there's so many.
In general, when we're dealing with the foreign names on a cold read here, we have to ask your indulgence.
The Turkish bosses. The last arrest warrant signed by Judge Palermo on December 22, 1982, concerned Ismail Oflu, age 39, international smuggler, considered the king of the Turkish underworld. He had his hand in every branch of Turkish crime, especially the traffic in drugs and guns. Oflu, O-F-L-U, was for a time a refugee in Sofia, and the Turkish police asked for his extradition for a whole series of crimes, including 3 homicides. But after a few months, his tracks were lost in Holland. To Oflu are directly tied Seal Hussein, age 40, Mustafa Kisacik, age 55, and Nahik Hassan, age 60, called by Judge Palermo, quote, 3 world-class promoters of the traffic in drugs and guns who developed with a base of contacts in Sofia, Bulgaria, obviously. The 3 men are in fact heads of the 3 most powerful Turkish mafia families, which have a monopoly on the production of drugs in the Syrian border region, where the poppies are grown. All 3, besides, are friends and partners of Henry Arsan. Remember, Henry Arsan is the main man at this point at Stibom. Now they're naming some names. Salah al-Din Wakas, W-A-K-K-A-S, represented the Turkish families in Milan, was based in a luxury apartment downtown. Many were his business contacts with Arsan, and above all with Karl Koffler, Herbert Oberhofer, and Gerlando Alberti, whom he met several times in Milan. His job, meaning Wakas' job, was to route the morphine base to Alberti, who would have it refined in Sicily. Now, Karl Koffler, one of those names mentioned, K-O-F-L-E-R, born in Trento, age 55, arrested December 1980 and driven into a corner. With his revelations, he will aid Judge Palermo to round up the ring that supplied Oberhofer the drugs found in his garden and in the vineyard in Bolzano. He was in contact with the brothers Kunz, K-U-N-Z, in Zurich. On March 7, 1981, he was found dead in his cell in Trento. Herbert Oberhofer, contractor and hotelier, age 40, ex-trafficker and for years a confidant and collaborator with the Guardia di Finanza, that's the finance police. The day, and by the way, we mentioned earlier in the broadcast, I can't remember the gentleman's name now, but one of the key members of the, I think actually the leader of the Italian Guardia di Finanza, the finance police, was a member of P2.
Giudice was the man's name, and
Giudice.
In fact, he was appointed by a Cardinal Poletti, who had a lot to do with getting him to where he was, and we talked about that in our second program.
The day after the discovery of the drugs at Mattarello, police found in the vineyard near Bolzano the remainder of the stock, 130 kilos of pure heroin and morphine. By the way, when they say the discovery of the drugs in Mattarello, that's the original Stiebaum arrest that we read you the article about from November of 82. 130 kilos of pure heroin and morphine were discovered in Oberhofer's vineyard near Bolzano. Arrested and held for several weeks, Oberhofer is now wanted. He had business ties with Kunz, Wacas, and Henry Arsene. Now, the Kunz brothers. Albert and Hans Kunz, financiers in Zurich, they were Calvi's men, tied also to Carboni's Sofint. They were supposed to have directed in Iran a load of arms from the United States and directed by Israel, acting in close contact with Arsene. And, if I remember correctly, Hans Kunz was in London meeting with Calvi the day before he was found dead.
The exact chronology of Calvi's travels just before his death, I forget, but both Kunz brothers were contacted by Calvi on his, I guess you could call it, Calvi's last ride.
Right, exactly. No, they were actually in London, as I recall from the stories, with Calvi. Anyway, so that's the Kunz brothers, but notice again now, the Kunz brothers in close contact with Arsene, also in close contact with Roberto Calvi, P2 member, confidant of Pope's, and leader, chairman of the Banco Ambrosiano. Okay, so if you need to tie that knot any tighter, there's another contact right there.
It'll be tied still tighter, but also be worth noting here what happened to Karl Kofler. He was an alleged prison suicide. He managed to commit suicide by thrusting himself through the heart with a long, sharp needle. That's another one of these very suspicious suicides in connection with this case.
Gerlando Alberti of Palermo, age 55, ex-lieutenant of Luciano Ligio. Get back to Legio in a second. By 1980, Alberti had control over the entire traffic in drugs to the U.S. He was arrested thanks to the investigation of Boris Giuliano in connection with the discovery of the huge heroin refineries at Chinisi and Punta Raisi. In Milan, Alberti had ties to Wacas through his lieutenant, Angelo Marai. Now, Luciano Legio was the head of Anonima Sequestri, which was a mafia kidnap gang that was also working for the right wing, and involved with the strategy of tension, and what had originally begun as a program for kidnapping businessmen and holding them for ransom expanded into a program that was a part of the strategy of tension.
Now, it was through the investigation of the Anonima Sequestri with links to the Mafia, to the P2, to Western Intelligence, it was through this investigation that Judge Accorsio had begun, it had come across the P2 Lodge and had begun investigating the P2 Lodge. Judge Accorsio was then assassinated by the aforementioned Pierluigi Conchitelli of Ordine Nuovo and Internazionale Fascista, as we looked at last week, acting at the behest of Stefano Della Chiai.
Okay. Continuing. Domenico Balducci, mafia boss, tied to Alberti, for whom he was the Roman representative of the traffic in drugs. He was a business partner of Flavio Carboni. Again, Flavio Carboni, intimate of Michele Sindona and later partner of Roberto Calvi. Balducci was a business partner of Flavio Carboni in the Punta Volpe real estate project in Sardinia, which asked Ambrosiano for a loan of 6 billion lira. Calvi said yes, but he was blocked by his vice president Roberto Rossone, who was attacked several months later. Balducci was sought by police at the end of 1978 for having signed bank transactions of dirty money, originating in kidnappings and drugs, from which Palermo and Naples ended up in Sindona's Amancor Bank in Switzerland. He was assassinated in Rome in front of his house on 16th of November of October 1981. Now, it's being explained right here, so I'll go ahead. Danilo Abruciati, killed April 26, 1982 in Milan while trying to shoot Roberto Rossone. Boss of the Roman underworld, especially drugs and extortion, former member of Anonima Sequestri, again, that's the Luciano Ligio group we were just talking about, of the Marseille gang Berenguer and Bergamelli, was in business contact with Balducci and Diotto Levi, the latter of whom was a partner of Calvi and present in Zurich at the moment of Calvi's flight. With a police record and now wanted, Deota Levy is another key man in the connection between the Roman underworld. Chink has had the Vatican Bank involved in, are not only involved in these financial scandals, which were bad enough in and of themselves, but are involved in the world's biggest fascist-oriented guns for terrorism network, Stibom. And we've seen now the net has drawn so tight as to be inescapable. There are no more coincidences. Stibom is a direct contact, if it's not actually a direct arm, of the P2, as is the Banco Ambrosiano at this point.
And it should be noted that P2 itself involves a much, much larger context involving international fascism, Western intelligence, and the CIA and other U.S. intelligence agencies in particular. We're going to be talking about that in connection with Stibom a little later. Still another connection between the Banco Ambrosiano P2 complex and Stibom is carried in the following story. Again, research credit to Ted Rubenstein, translation Jonathan Marshall. This is from the Italian news magazine L'Espresso of the issue of December 12, 1982. The headline of the article is Amid Arms and Drugs Between Sofia and Brescia. Skipping down in the article, coming out talking about Stibom here. Arsan comes from a noble family and was in Italy for 20 years. Undisturbed in his traffic, despite being known at the time to the DEA. Remember that, we're going to come back to it. His telephone began to spill important information. It made clear that the little old man had his hand in the international arms trade, but it didn't clarify where the arms left and where they ended up. That mosaic began to come together at the beginning of the year when police, listening in, learned a new name long known to them, Renato Gamba, last name G-A-M-B-A. An armorer with a factory in Valtrompia in the province of Brescia, Gamba was known for his production of precious small caliber, that's a valuable, it really would be a better translation, of valuable small caliber pistols and hunting rifles. Who would have ever expected someone like that to be involved in the traffic in armored cars and assault helicopters? But sure enough, one day at the beginning of summer, he left for that temple of intrigue, the Hotel Richmond in Geneva. The task assigned him by Arsan to find, for an anxiously awaiting buyer, 20 armored cars, 25 tanks, and 10 helicopters. Police intercepted calls between Gamba in Geneva and Arsan in Milan. They investigated further and found some surprises. First, in the spring of 1982, new capital came to Gamba's plant. It was sent by a Milan finance house, Brugge Izzar, born as an honorable maker of pottery and silver, which transformed itself within a few months under the guidance of little-known persons, suggesting that they were figureheads acting on behalf of others. By the way, Brugge Izzar is B-R-O-G-G-I. The second word is I-Z-A-R. Continuing. The new owners had the clear and long-considered idea of quickly creating a defense division, unquote, to sell arms of all types and electronic systems. They entrusted this to a foreigner, Reginald Allas, A-L-L-A-S, famous in the world of arms, who prided himself on having access to both the Pentagon and the Kremlin. He began investing money in the business to produce light arms. With difficulty, investigators penetrated this labyrinth and they discovered something else peculiar. A share, 2.3% of Brugge Izzar, belonged to the Banco Ambrosiano of Roberto Calvi. He must have known that this finance house was in the business of making arms. Police then remembered another curiosity that before looked casual. Stibom was headquartered in a building owned by Ambrosiano, where lived the former vice president of the bank, Roberto Rassone. And I would interrupt, as we just looked at, his killer and the person who apparently recruited him also very much connected with the P2 complex and Stibom. Continuing. Too many coincidences. Gamba, in search of armored cars, installed himself in the Hotel Richmond, a place frequented by another person prominent in the Calvi case, Hans Kunz, who organized the final voyage of the banker to London. He rented the plane that took him there. Kunz, officially an oil merchant, isn't only that. Last August 2nd, Iran ordered from him $50 million in war equipment. So, in the case of Henry Arsan here, one of his associates, and a person who apparently did his bidding at least certain occasions, is a man named Renato Gamba. Gamba's formerly manufactured commercial firearms, that is, valuable pistols and hunting rifles, decides to get into the military armaments business, and in so doing, he's financed or refinanced by an organization, Brugge Izzar, which was described as being very, very mysterious in this article. Brugge Izzar has capital participation, albeit only 2%, by the Banco Ambrosiano of Roberto Calvi, in whose headquarters building, Stibom, is also headquartered.
Okay, now, excuse me, a very short section of an article here from Corriere della Sera. The motor functions are going already. It's only 9:30. From December 11th, 1982, the headline for the article as a whole is "The Investigation into Arms Traffic Are Extending into Germany." They're talking again about Henry Arsène, head of Stibom, and it says, oh, by the way, this is again a Jonathan Marshall translation provided to us by Ted Rubenstein. "It is truly incredible how Henry Arsène, contacted by the American and Turkish secret services in 1973, known by the Italian police, continued undisturbed for 20 years under the insignia of his Milan company, Stibom." It's not so much incredible unless you try and maintain that it's a coincidence. Again, Henry Arsène, contacted by the American and Turkish secret services in 1973, also known to Italian police, for 20 years working as Stibom in Milan. We're going to hear a little bit more about Henry Arsène, some of his connections to Western intelligence, which are rather interesting. First, however, we are going to take a short break and give you all a chance to get up and stretch, those of you who are listening all the way through, and since Dave and myself have no choice but to be listening all the way through, we're definitely ready to get up and stretch.
And we're going to stretch our minds and our vocal cords and our lips and tongues, too, which are getting taxed badly here.
That's right. See if we can develop that facility that we, of course, one of the world centers of arms shipments. I thought that might also be appropriate. And what we are talking about, of course, is so far to date the biggest guns and drugs operation yet brought to light, that being Stibom, S-T-I-B-A-M, and that being an operation apparently directly under the control, or at least largely under the control, of those fine gentlemen at the Propaganda Due Masonic Lodge, notably people like Licio Gelli, Michele Sindona, Umberto Ortolani, Roberto Calvi, and others. And as we mentioned, Henry Arsène's main office of Stibom, located in the Banco Ambrosiano building in Milan, that same building where once the scandals started breaking, people went flying out the window there like popcorn. We've talked about that a little bit tonight. But more importantly, again, we're talking about a vast circuit of terror, I guess you could say, starting with the drug traffic of the Middle East, most notably Turkish and Lebanese drugs, opium, heroin, antecedents, being transshipped by the Phalanges with the help of the Turkish fascist group, the Grey Wolves, into Italy, into Sicily, and processing plants there and going thence to South and Central America, up into the United States, at which point they're exchanged for weaponry and the reverse circuit begins. This is, of course, very important because all along the way money is being made. This is also an organization that is run entirely by right-wingers, and it seems to be being used mostly to profit right-wing organizations, right-wing political factions, and whole right-wing governments. We talked earlier about how some of the profits were probably used, one of those areas being Operation Condor, in which some of these groups, these governments in South America got together and basically developed sanction units for the elimination of their enemies. Not a new concept, but one brought to perfection by people like Stefano Della Chiaia and other P2 hitmen extraordinaire.
In the section that we just concluded before the break, we looked at a number of different connections between the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring and the P2 Nexus. We looked at a part capital participation by Banco Ambrosiano in one of the key arms suppliers, and Arsène Associates, Renato Gamba. We took a look at an intersection of a lot of people, Danilo Abruciati, Domenico Balducci, and a whole bunch of other people associated with Roberto Calvi, Flavio Carboni, and others, and their connections to Stibom. Just before the break, Nip read a short section of an article in which it basically, the statement was made that it was truly remarkable how Henry Arsène was able to continue undisturbed for nearly 20 years despite being known to the authorities. Well, during this section of the broadcast, we're going to get into some of the international connections of Stibom and the influences of some of the other people, some of the other Stibom elements beside the P2 complex that we just delineated. Again, research credit for the following story goes to Ted Rubenstein, translation Jonathan Marshall. This is from Panorama, the Italian magazine Panorama of May 9th, 1983, and it's an interview with Judge Carlo Palermo, the magistrate investigating Stibom. It quotes him as follows. The common link among the small and big traffic is Henry Arsène, a Syrian who frequently stayed in Italy and who had interests in many import-export businesses. He was involved in drugs and was at the same time a collaborator of the DEA, the American police specializing in the fight against drug trafficking. A man of 1,000 commercial ventures, never scorning the sector of arms. One of the things that we've looked at in the past on our programs, And we're going to be looking at it at great length in our series on organized crime, narcotics, and the intelligence community, is how the DEA and other American Drug Enforcement Administrations have, and in fact, or agencies, I should say, have in fact been used to traffic drugs as well as to enforce against their distribution. And here we have Henry Arsan, according to the judge who investigated this, a collaborator of the DEA. And Nip's about to read you a short section of an article which will delineate at greater length the DEA connections of Henry Arsan.
Okay. Reading from, again, Corriere della Sera, and a short segment from an article of December 16, 1982. On 5th of August, 1973, an agent of the DEA and a special Turkish agent made contact with Arsan. The American was Thomas Angioletti, says a document from the Italian Interior Ministry, quote, "From that moment, Arsan collaborated with our offices in Rome and Milan, from which he obtained various permits with the help of the agent, to obtain 100 kilos of morphine base from İsmet Seel and Mustafa Cyril." It seems that Arsan played a double game, though, going from a liquor and cigarette smuggler to big-time heroin dealer. So on the 5th of August, 1973, interestingly, 1973 is the year that a lot of these things start happening. 1973, I think, is also the year that Muammar al-Qaddafi took power in Libya, and we talked about some earlier events that started in 1973. But in 1973, an American DEA agent, Thomas Angioletti, got together with Henry Arsan, and with the help of Angioletti, Arsan was able to obtain 100 kilos of morphine base. Now, 100 kilos of morphine base, when translated into heroin, I have no idea how much it would be an incredible quantity of heroin, just a mind-staggering amount.
Okay, now the DEA operations of Henry Arsan are worth keeping in mind, because now we're going to be getting into not only some American connections, but specifically connections between Stibom and American intelligence and national security elements. And those connections are massive. Also, we're going to hear about a name of a certain former Hollywood movie actor turned politician who's also going to crop up in connection with this series of figures.